Today is Monday, April 1st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, President Trump threatens to close the U.S. border with Mexico.
100,000 people coming across the border this month. That's not a made-up number, by the way, despite the fact that many Democrats still think that it is. That is a crisis.
Turkey's ruling party faced tough competition in Sunday's elections. Also ahead, on the anniversary of Earth Hour, a special museum exhibit. It's all on today's International Edition. President Trump is moving to cut aid to a trio of Central American nations whose citizens have been fleeing north toward the United States border. AP correspondent Ben Thomas reports.
The State Department has told Congress it's looking to suspend aid payments to El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras. Acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney tells ABC's This Week.
Meaning that the Northern Triangle countries to do more about not allowing their people into Mexico. They can help us. We need them to do that. If not, it makes very little sense for us to continue to send them aid.
But Senator Dick Durbin tells NBC's Meet the Press the U.S. should be focused on helping Central America.
Where three countries are dissembling before our eyes and people are desperately coming to the United States. The president's cutting off aid to these countries will not solve that problem.
And the president is again threatening to close the border with Mexico, despite warnings that could create economic havoc on both sides. Ben Thomas, Washington.
Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. Is Britain heading for a constitutional crisis? Thais protest cheating election commission. Arab leaders are seeking a UN Security Council resolution on Golan Heights. And thousands of Kobani celebrate victory over ISIS. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Turkey's ruling party faced competition in Sunday's municipal elections. Voters elected mayors, assembly members, administrators, and councilors for cities, neighborhoods, and districts. The poll is widely seen as a referendum on Turkey's populist president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan. VOA Kurdish and Turkish language service reporters spoke to voters at the polls Sunday. Zlatika Hoke has this story.
Turkey's local elections came amid an economic recession, inflation, and currency decline. The economic downturn has many Turks worried.
Young people in this country are unemployed. We know the hardships of people who don't have a job. The only solution to this is creating jobs. That's why I cast my vote in this direction.
But there are also concerns about other issues, such as the increasingly authoritarian government.
Through media, propaganda, and a lot of ideas are imposed on us. We will resist till the end, and we will keep our hope till the end. As youth who follows Ataturk, we will be standing tall and protect his efforts and works.
Mustafa Kemal Ataturk was Turkey's revolutionary leader and its first president. He reformed the predominantly Islamic country into a modern secular state. Many Turks accuse Erdogan of trying to erase Ataturk's legacy. Some voters were pessimistic about the future for more than one reason.
I am not hopeful. I don't think things are going well. There is nothing else to say. There are a lot of economic factors. I don't think the education I got is enough. I don't think domestic and foreign issues are going well.
Turkey's Kurdish minority had the opportunity to vote for members of the pro-Kurdish People's Democratic Party in their municipalities, but many said it will not make a difference.
An election is only held as a formality to give Erdogan the appearance of legitimacy. The rest does not matter. He can still do what he wants.
Local polls in Turkey are an indicator of voters' opinion on major parties. Election results in the capital Ankara and in Istanbul are especially significant. Erdogan's Islamist party, which has been in power since 2002, faced a tough challenge from the opposition in both cities. The opposition was poised to win in Izmir, Turkey's third largest city. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
Arab solidarity and joint efforts to confront political and economic crises were the main topics of discussion at the 30th annual Summit of Arab Leaders held in the Tunisian resort town of Carthage Sunday. Iranian behavior across the region, along with the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and the Syrian crisis, were also major topics of the debate. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Arab leaders discussed the key topics facing the region and their own countries in the televised session of the annual summit Sunday in the Tunisian resort town of Carthage. Arab media spoke of discord over several key issues after Qatar's leader Sheikh Tamim and Jordanian King Abdullah II left the summit early. Saudi King Salman told the gathering the top issues confronting the region are Iranian meddling in the affairs of many Arab states, as well as the unresolved conflict in Syria. He says Iran's aggressive regional behavior represents a threat to international agreements and must be dealt with by the international community. He adds the recent U.S. decision to recognize Israeli sovereignty over the Golan Heights highlights the need for a solution to the Syrian conflict that guarantees the country's unity. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi stressed the urgent need to address terrorism. He says Arab states are facing a critical juncture and must make a concerted effort to combat all forms of terrorism and its underlying ideology, which kills the innocent, opposes religious beliefs, and ignores principles of human rights. Terrorism, he says, threatens the unity of all Arab states, and they must work together to combat it. Iraqi President Barham Saleh said no Arab state should think itself immune to the threat of terrorism and stressed his country paid a heavy price to achieve victory over it. He criticized the selfish interests of many Arab states and pledged cooperation. He says the main principle of Iraq's relations with its Arab and Islamic neighbors is that it won't enter into alliances with anyone, but will work towards the common good and mutual interest of all parties. Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas presented a litany of grievances against the United States and Israel. He denounced U.S. recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital, the closure of the Palestinian diplomatic mission in Washington, and cuts in U.S. funding to UNRWA, which provides schooling and health care for many Palestinians. He also blamed Israel for withholding funding to the Palestinian Authority and condemned it for occupying Palestinian land. Lebanese President Michel Aoun blasted U.S. recognition of Israeli sovereignty over the Golan Heights, insisting that small states like Lebanon feel vulnerable when larger states do not respect international law. Aoun also expressed Lebanon's concern over the settling of Palestinian and Syrian refugees on its soil, urging they be allowed to return home. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
President Donald Trump has been celebrating the findings of the report prepared by Special Counsel Robert Mueller on the Russia investigation. Mueller cleared the president and his 2016 campaign of colluding with Russia, but he did not make a judgment on whether Trump sought to obstruct justice. That decision was made by Attorney General William Barr, who said there was not enough evidence to warrant further action. The political fallout from the Mueller report could reach well into the 2020 presidential campaign, as we hear from VOA national correspondent Jim Malone in Washington.
At the U.S. Capitol, a triumphant President Donald Trump meets with Senate Republicans.
It was proven very strongly, no collusion, no obstruction, no nothing. We are doing so well. We've never probably had a time of prosperity like this. It's been great.
Trump's Republican allies believe he can reset his political agenda, including Senator Lindsey Graham.
You're probably stronger today than you've been any time in your presidency. This cloud has been removed. The question for you is, how do you use it? What are you going to do?
Democrats are demanding the release of the full Mueller report, including Senator Chuck Schumer.
And our main thrust on this issue is simply transparency. Release the report, then come to conclusions.
For now, the Mueller report finding of no collusion with Russia is a political boost for the president, says Bill Sweeney.
For President Trump, the preliminary reports on the Mueller report are all very, very positive. But the question remains, what's in the Mueller report and how will the administration release that information to the Congress and the American people?
But Sweeney predicts it will have a limited impact on the upcoming presidential election.
I think President Trump's base stays with President Trump. I think those opposed to President Trump remain opposed to President Trump. So far, the Mueller report has done nothing to change the hearts or minds or soul of any undecided voter going into this election. You know you a star,
you can touch the sky. New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand is the latest Democrat to officially join a crowded field of presidential contenders.
And that is why I am running for President of the United States.
Analyst Matt Dalek says there's a reason why so many Democrats are lining up to take a shot at the White House in 2020.
You wouldn't see this many candidates running if they didn't think that they had a real shot at unseating an incumbent for the first time since Bill Clinton did it in 1992 to George H.W. Bush.
Trump may have strengthened his base following the Mueller report and made impeachment a more remote option for congressional Democrats. For their part, Democrats are more likely now to focus their efforts on beating Trump at the polls next year, says analyst Larry Sabato.
Democrats have to find a way to break up that Electoral College majority that Trump got. There are ways to do it. There are reasonable ways to do it. But it isn't even close to being assured.
Trump is hoping to follow in the footsteps of other recent two-term presidents like Barack Obama and George W. Bush, and avoid the fate of Bush's father, George H.W. Bush.
I just want to tell you that America is the greatest place on earth.
Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Actress and activist Angelina Jolie says promoting equality for women, combating injustice, and helping refugees are the most important parts of her life after her six children. AP correspondent Julie Walker reports.
Angelina Jolie spent Friday at the United Nations addressing ministers. She says women and girls are still the majority of the victims of war. They're over half of all refugees and the vast majority of victims of rape. She's pushing for countries to do more to end conflicts and advocating for more female peacekeepers, among other initiatives.
Think of how much more we could achieve with women's equal participation in all aspects of society. Not at the expense of men, but alongside men, because we are all partners in this life.
Jolie began working with the UN Refugee Agency in 2001 and became a special envoy in 2012. Julie Walker, New York.
And you're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Voices. We're talking about the news and issues you're talking about.
Sharing stories of development and growth across Africa, around the world, and in our lives. Topics that inform, empower,
and change the rules.
It's time for Our Voices
with me, Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick,
and Hadiza Kiari,
and Ayan Bior,
and Orion Itangi Shaka. Join us on Facebook at VOA Our Voices.
It's time for Our Voices.
VOA's Learning English is available online at learningenglish.voanews.com. Check out our programs such as Let's Learn English, English in a Minute, Everyday Grammar, and many more. VOA's Learning English, your reliable source for learning English.
We'll be right back.
VOA's International Edition continues. A groundbreaking new exhibit at the museum in Washington, D.C. marks the 50th anniversary of a police raid on a gay bar in New York's Greenwich Village and highlights key moments in the modern gay rights movement in America that many believe was born out of that historic event. For some members of the LGBTQ community, the exhibit is deeply personal. VOA's Julie Tabot has more.
The streets around the Stonewall Inn are quiet now. But 50 years ago, in June of 1969, this popular gay bar in New York City was a site of violent confrontation when an unprovoked police raid triggered widespread outrage. The uprising resulted in several days of riots and demonstrations, which many believe was the catalyst for the modern gay rights movement. Now, a new exhibit at the museum in Washington, D.C. explores that tumultuous period. Exhibit writer Christy Wolliver says it focuses on the courageous efforts of everyday Americans.
This big movement was spurred on by people who wanted to make a change, whether that's fighting for the right to work and serve, whether that's parading in the streets and celebrating who you are, or whether that's winning the right to marry.
Jim Obergefell was one of those people. He fought for marriage equality in the state of Ohio for him and his longtime partner, John Arthur, who had been diagnosed with a fatal disease.
Because we lived in Ohio where we were not able to get married, we chartered a medical jet and flew to Baltimore, where we parked on the tarmac at BWR Airport and got married inside that airplane. And then when we learned that the state of Ohio, at the time John died, would ignore our legal marriage and say that he was unmarried and not list my name as his surviving spouse, we decided we weren't willing to stand for that, and we filed suit against the state of Ohio. And that ended up going all the way to the Supreme Court, where we won. And on June 26, 2015, marriage equality became the law of the land.
Obergefell loaned personal objects to the museum to illustrate his story. The couple's wedding rings, the jacket he was wearing when they got married, and the bow tie he wore when the Supreme Court decision was announced. Other trailblazers are also represented in the museum. Frank Kameny, who many consider the father of the LGBTQ rights movement, used this portable typewriter to create memos, pamphlets, and protest materials. There's a display case for Harvey Milk, a leading human rights activist and one of the country's first openly gay elected officials assassinated after only a year in office. There's memorabilia from Congressman Barney Frank, who announced he was gay in 1987 after having served for three terms. And a red dress from Tammy Baldwin, who in 1998 became the first openly gay woman to be elected to the U.S. Congress. John Lake, who works for one of the sponsors of the exhibit, found it deeply personal.
Going through the exhibit, I see these moments that now impact my life in a very real way. Like seeing Jim Obergefell's jacket that he was married in, that happened around the same time that I proposed to my husband, and to see those moments really coming to life for the community, it just really brings it home.
While there have been great strides made in the gay rights movement over the past 50 years, many acknowledge that there's still much work to be done. Julie Tabo, VOA News, Washington.
12 years after the inaugural Earth Hour observance in Australia, countries around the world continue joining the grassroots gesture against man-made carbon dioxide emissions. This year in the Philippines, armed with lightsabers, fans of the movie Star Wars joined the world with a nod to a galaxy far, far away. Arash Arabasadi has the story.
These Star Wars fans are not trying out for a role in the franchise's next film. They are, however, observing the annual Earth Hour initiative.
So when the lights come down, our sabers come up, and that's our that's our way to rally. That's our rally together, you know. People can do great things when they come together.
The Earth Hour observance started more than a decade ago in Australia. The World Wildlife Fund organized the grassroots movement against man-made CO2 emissions linked to warming the planet.
Even in face of all these environmental problems, we can come together as one group under one banner, one lightsaber, you know, everyone common, and, you know, we can really make a change.
Saturday, about 100 Star Warriors marched through the Philippine capital, Manila. Fans of all ages raised the famous lightsaber in the mostly blacked-out commercial district.
I think using Star Wars as a touch point for a lot of people gives the message that there are ways to go about this. There are ways to have fun in the dark that, you know, promote that message that you can conserve energy and you can have fun while doing it.
The Philippine Islands were just one of many places taking part. According to Earth Hour, more than 180 countries and territories joined this year's observance. At 8:30 p.m. local time Saturday, major capitals around the world turned off their lights. But as the name implies, they were back on by about 9:30. Arash Erbasadi, VOA News, Washington.
What's happening? Where are they taking her?
Take Dumbo back inside.
But she's his mom. Do something. She needs us. Look at me. We're going to bring your mama home.
Disney's Dumbo was the top movie over the weekend, but it still had an underwhelming liftoff at the domestic box office. Ticket sales were below expectations for Tim Burton's live-action remake that debuted over the weekend. Part of the reason for the softer opening is likely because the original Dumbo cartoon came out 80 years ago, making the lovable elephant seem slightly less relevant than classics like Beauty and the Beast and The Jungle Book, which both became huge successes for the studio. Critics and audiences had mixed reviews on the film. Joining us now, Vegas film critic Jeffrey K. Howard. Jeff, you saw the film. What did you think?
This is a Disney classic. Everybody loves the story of Dumbo from the 1940s, where an elephant can fly and has some of the greatest songs that are Disney classics, like Baby Mine and When I See an Elephant Fly and Pink Elephants on Parade. Who could forget that nightmarish sequence? It's one of the most famous in animation. So this is the trend that Disney's doing. It's taking their old properties, their old classics, and turning them into live-action films. They did it with Jungle Book. We have Aladdin coming out, Beauty and the Beast, Cinderella. All these went to live-action. Here's where they dropped the formula with this. Instead of taking the animated film and what made it so successful, they changed it into a dark, foreboding family film. First, by hiring Tim Burton, who is a legend. I love Tim Burton, you know, from Beetlejuice to, you know, Pee-wee's Big Adventure to Alice in Wonderland. But his guidance on this film has made it so dark. They took out the little mouse, Timothy, that was like Dumbo's conscience, and they made it with two teenage kids or 12-year-old kids who take care of Dumbo. And then also we have Danny DeVito, who plays a washed-up circus owner, the Medici family. He sells Dumbo to Michael Keaton, who's this evil amusement park owner who wants to exploit Dumbo and make a fortune from it. So a lot of the original film is not in Dumbo. And another thing about Dumbo is that one of the reveals is that Dumbo only flew at the end of the movie, of the animated film, and he had a little feather in his trunk, so he believed that's what made him fly when he could do it himself. He flies like 15 times in this new live-action version. So after you see him fly like the sixth time, I was having trouble to suspend my disbelief. I started thinking, you know, here's an animal, a baby elephant that weighs the same as a VW Beetle. How in the world is this thing getting off the ground? You know how hard his ears would have to flap to do that? And also the kids are riding him, and Ava Green, who plays a trapeze artist in the movie, who's the love interest for Michael Keaton's character, the evil Vandermeer, she rides him during her trapeze act. And I'm like, what? You know, so there's no wonder, there's no imagination. They do sing Baby Mine in the movie, which is kind of like one of the highlights. It looks fantastic, but it's just too dark and too foreboding. It's just, there's nothing magical about this movie, and I really didn't like it. It's disappointing because you had some great opportunity here to do this. I think Disney should just start doing originals again. Stop going back to the well and re-imaging these classics. Just leave them alone.
And you also just saw Highwaymen, a true story starring Kevin Costner about the police chase of Bonnie and Clyde?
Yeah, former Texas Rangers Frank Hammer and Manny Gold, played by Kevin Costner and Woody Harrelson, they are hired by the governor of Texas at the time, Ma Ferguson, played by Kathy Bates, who disbanded the Texas Rangers. But Bonnie and Clyde have been causing chaos and killing people all over the South for 2 years. They are unstoppable. And so the feds are brought in. You know, J. Edgar Hoover's hot on their trail. Every local police, you know, force is on their trail, but no one can catch these guys. So this true story of these two Rangers who came out of retirement used old-school techniques to hunt these guys down. And what's really unique about this, it's not only from Netflix. Again, Netflix is changing the way we watch movies with these incredible movies streaming on their service. But also, this movie has such authenticity and realism because it takes place during the Great Depression. So the backgrounds with the production design and the old-fashioned cars and the costumes and the guns, it just gives this realism to the movie. And also, being a true story really gives how, you know, the old school of investigation was changing. because J. Edgar Hoover's men were coming in, and the FBI, in this show, in this movie, they show these new modern techniques of CSI coming into play, fingerprints, bullet casings. They started using those techniques where they started to dawn in with this Bonnie and Clyde killing spree. And what's also cool about this is that we see Bonnie and Clyde, but we don't hear from them. They're always at a distance. We just see maybe their feet in some sort of, you know, artistic fashion. But they're not the focus of this movie. It's about the Texas Rangers that brought them down. And even these guys have demons working with each other for many, many years. And even though they're the police and they're the good guys, they still have horrible, horrible regret for killing so many people in the line of duty. So it's a rich film. It's a fascinating film. And I love Kevin Costner. And Woody Harrelson's, like, I think, one of the greatest actors of our generation. So Highwaymen, streaming on Netflix. Don't miss it. It's really good.
All right. Jeffrey K. Howard, he is the Vegas Film Critic. And you can find his full video reviews at VegasFilmCritic.com. The Rolling Stones are postponing their latest tour so Mick Jagger can receive medical treatment. The band announced Saturday that Jagger was told by doctors he cannot go on tour at this time. While no details were revealed as the 75-year-old Jagger's condition, as to the 75-year-old Jagger's condition, but the band said he's expected to make a complete recovery so that he can get back on stage as soon as possible. The Stones' No Filter tour was expected to start April 20th in Miami, with other stops including New Orleans Jazz Festival, Pasadena, and Santa Clara, California, Seattle, Denver, Washington, D.C., Ontario, Canada, and more. Jagger said in a statement that he hates letting the fans down, but that he is looking forward to getting back on stage as soon as he can. You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. We thank you so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.